Hello, this is a podcast from SCC English, the English department of St. Columba's College, Dublin in Ireland. Visit our blog at sccenglish.ie. Welcome to the SCC English podcast number 2. This is Julian Gurdon from the English department of St. Columba's College in Dublin in Ireland, our second ever podcast. And this week, in March 2009, I am talking to the former head of the department, John Flanagan, who retired last summer, about an American author. And John has spent last few months in his retirement, partly reconstructing his kitchen, which is currently the SCC English podcast studio, but also catching up with reading, and in particular, an author who he says he has, in his own words, been binging on. And I'm going to talk to him about that author, his life, his work. So, John, welcome to the second ever podcast.
Thank you.
And can you tell us who your chosen author is?
My chosen author is Richard Yates, made, I suppose, known to a new generation through the success of Revolutionary Road, film based upon his first and probably most successful novel. Binging is an appropriate word because he was a chronic alcoholic, a chain smoker. His personal life was a complete disaster. And a lot of this is reflected in his books. But the one part of his life which was really successful was his writing. He didn't write easily. For example, it took him at least 5 years to write Revolutionary Road. Before that, he had been known to discerning American readers for his short stories, particularly his first collection called 11 Kinds of Loneliness. I was amazed that I hadn't heard of him before. One of my friends said she remembered reading Revolutionary Road when she was at college. But I find he's a remarkable writer. He's very easy to relate to, not because of his personal life, but because his prose is very, very clear, very accessible, and very, very elegant.
Right, we'll talk about his novels in a moment, and I think you're going to be a kind of advocate for them. But first of all, the life. And I notice in the first line, basically, of the biography which you've just read, which is called A Tragic Honesty, The Life and Work of Richard Yates by Blake Bailey, the first sentence I came across was, if the prerequisite of any great writer's life is an unhappy childhood, then Richard Yates was especially blessed. So could you tell us about this, what you call the disaster area of his life, starting with his upbringing?
Yes, his upbringing wasn't underprivileged, but his parents separated when he was about 6 or 7. He had one older sister, and his mother was an unusually demanding woman. She had artistic pretensions, and indeed, she did a sculpture of the head of the just elected Franklin Roosevelt in 1932, just before he went to the White House. However, she never achieved the fame that she desired, and she was a constant drag on her son and daughter. Her daughter, Ruth, Richard's older sister, married and descended into chronic alcoholism and died a wreck. I think it's astonishing that Richard Yates survived as long as he did. He was born in 1926, died in 1992. But the way he abused his body through alcohol and tobacco, not eating properly, living in filthy, squalid conditions, with really the only important thing his typewriter, makes his life story, in fact, his biography, very, very much like one of his own novels. I read it as if I were reading a novel. And I've never known a writer who was so autobiographical, not only dealing with his own life, but dealing with friends, colleagues, relations. They all appear in his books in a flattering or, more often, slightly unflattering light. It's as if he didn't let go of any bit of experience that he could use in his books.
This life, which, as you say, is a disaster area, I read in the biography towards the end, the writer of that, Blake Bailey, said that, like Scott Fitzgerald, to some extent he'd frittered away a major talent. But you seem to be suggesting, in given the number of books he wrote, and indeed perhaps one or two masterpieces, that it wasn't actually frittered away, this talent.
No, I don't think so. And what surprises me is that even though there's something going through all of his books, unhappiness, ideals frustrated. As I said, there is a quality in his writing that is remarkably consistent. Now, one friend of mine who has read some of his books says she found it frustrating because sometimes a character will appear that's based on somebody in his own life and then will just be dropped, or their character not fully developed, or they just turn up later in the book. That happens really in Young Hearts Crying, where the couple split up and then he deals with each of them separately as they go their separate ways, and then you're wondering, well, what happened to X while Y was doing this? So there are, the fact that so much of it is based on or from his own life has its drawbacks. However, Scott Fitzgerald, who was his great idol, he loved particularly The Great Gatsby, he would cry every time he read the last paragraph. I think the quality of Yeats's work is much more even and consistent than Fitzgerald's. And right to the end, I think he was writing in a very superior way.
Were there any relationships in his life which actually functioned?
Yes. He was twice married. He had two daughters by his first wife and one daughter by his second wife. And they all loved him and supported him and were there for him. And they were needed more than once, you know, to come and rescue him. But really, he had one or two close male friends. He always liked, admired, and desired attractive women. But he was an impossible person to live with. Whether with his wives or the women that he had affairs with, they never lasted because of his selfishness, because of his drinking, because of the demands he made on the relationship.
He was also, as two teachers discussing Richard Yates, quite interested in his work as a teacher. He was a teacher and apparently a very good one, was that right?
Yes. He, in order to make money, when he wasn't making money from his stories or his novels, he got often arranged by good-natured friends, academic friends, in Ohio and other places, other universities. He taught creative writing. And he was extraordinarily patient with his students, much more patient with them than he would be, for example, in his personal relationships, because he knew how difficult it was to write. I just have an example in front of me of when he had just got writer's block. He composed three four-line poems, just using the Q-W-E-R-T-Y line on the modern typewriter. This is one of them. It's called A Confession of Fulbright's. We were poor. We were witty. Our poetry tip-top. Our Europe pretty. We quit our torpor, quit our rue. Yet, oh, we quit our typewriter too. This is, as his biographer says, is a man with far too much time on his hands. But he knew that he had to have everything perfect when he wrote it, and he wouldn't be satisfied unless it was.
It sounds like a good exercise, actually, for one's pupils. I might try that. I think they'd struggle with the third line if they write a poem with Z, X, C, V,
yes.
B, N, and M. But
yeah.
Maybe the first one or two might have a go with that.
Yeah.
Now, we should move on to what's really important, which is the fiction, specifically the novels. And as you mentioned at the beginning, he is now no longer certainly forgotten. Right now, a lot of attention on him because of his novel Revolutionary Road, which this year has been made into a very successful film. So let's just talk about the novel as a novel first, this book. Can you describe the setup for it, of it for us?
Yeah, Revolutionary Road. Strange title. It's actually the name of a suburban street, a kind of wisteria lane, where Charlie and April Wheeler, the young couple at the centre of the book, live. The couple played by Kate Winslet and Leonardo DiCaprio in the film. But there is it's not an accidental title, because it is they are living a boring, unfulfilled life, particularly the husband, who's quite creative and is in a kind of a dead end job in an office in the city, and his wife, is April, has had a very unhappy childhood. Like Yeats himself, her parents separated, and it deals with their relationship, and it's very, very bleak. There's just one character in it, who's the son, who's in a mental hospital, of the woman who found the house for them and is a neighbour. He's the only one who seems to see what the truth is about the disastrous marriage, the unfulfilled ideals. And the ending of the book is truly grim. I was utterly gripped. As I mentioned earlier, the style so simple, the dialogue so convincing, the outlook so pitiable.
And what about the film? I remember when you saw it, you said to me afterwards, gosh, it was good, but boy, was it depressing, which you've just said with the book. So what, as a film, what did you think of it, and also compared to its source?
I think it was remarkably true to its source in terms of the dialogue, in terms of the setting. I'm not sure about Leonardo DiCaprio as Charlie Wheeler. Maybe it's just because he's too familiar. I've seen him in too many things. Might have been better to have nobody that one knew, an unknown actor. However, he acted his socks off, as did Kate Winslet. One thing I did like, it was just the way the whole era, the early 60s, is evoked. They're talking about, you know, Kennedy versus Nixon, the way it's dressed, the way they dress, the constant smoking and drinking, which, by the way, reminded me also of something that I'm enjoying very much at the moment, the TV program Mad Men, set at exactly the same time with just the same sort of characters, though more successful, as inhabit the novels of Richard Yates. So I think the film, I saw it literally the same day as I finished the book, and it was a double dose of depression, but the sort of depression that you kind of wallow in a way, because I think there is a little bit like the reason why I think soap operas like EastEnders are so popular, because terrible things are happening in them all the time. Nobody seems to smile.
I think I should ask you this question, because I know you just referred to one of your great cultural loves, which is the series Desperate Housewives.
Yes.
And I know this is a profound examination of life and Americanism and so on. What raises Revolutionary Road above Desperate Housewives? Or perhaps nothing does. Maybe
did I say it was above? If I had to watch, to
compare,
choose between
compare and contrast.
All right, compare and contrast. I think there is, in Desperate Housewives, there's a quality of high camp, over the top, both humor and disaster, that is highly ironic and certainly means you can't take it seriously. In the novels of Yeats, Revolutionary Road, for example, if anything, it's very understated in its style. A reason, as a teacher, I would recommend it also is that I spent my time, when my pupils would write creatively, trying to say understate rather than overstate. It's so much more effective. And it's very hard, I think, for a young person, maybe a lot of older people too, to understand that.
And how typical would you say Revolutionary Road is of the other books which we'll move on to now? Is it a typical Yeats novel?
Yeah, it's typical in the sort of people, as I say, the young Americans mainly of the 60s that inhabit it. It is typical, but he's quite versatile. For example, in a book that I'm about to read and haven't read yet, called Easter Parade, he's, you know, very much writing from the point of view of women, two girls, two sisters, Sarah and Emily. And I'm looking forward to that because he's clearly able to look at life from different perspectives. Another very different one, but of course very autobiographical, is where he deals with younger people in his book A Good School, which is based on his own experiences. He got the opportunity to go to a boarding school for the last two or three years of his secondary school education.
Now, you're an expert on a boarding school, boarding schools. So how similar is that to the boarding school we know well as a kind of description of an institution, as a place, the relationships between people? Is it similar or is it from a totally different world?
Not totally different. It's a slightly eccentric school. I mean, a lot of boarding schools are. Some people would find St. Columba's eccentric too. However, of course, it's all male. And it's told from the point of view of somebody who would be regarded now, the word geek might be used. He's a writer. He's not a jock. But he has great opportunities there. He manages, before he leaves, to become the editor of the school newspaper, which is of a very high quality. And yes, there are a lot of the boarding school experiences that you could identify with, but it's very much an all-male world, and it's also governed by a peculiar constitution of the benefactress who set it up, in that they are not allowed to play any sports or have any competitions of any kind against other schools. It all has to be in-house, which makes it just a little bit boring for them. But it's a different type of writing from the other books, and it's a very interesting insight into how Yeats himself was developing as a writer, you know, at the ages of 16, 17, 18.
Just a reminder, if you've just tuned in halfway through this podcast, I'm talking to John Fannigan, former teacher of English at St. Columba's College, on this SCC English podcast, and you can learn more about us at our blog sccenglish.ie. And we're talking about the work of Richard Yeats, spelt not like the great Irish poet, but Y-A-T-E-S. And we're coming not too far away from the end of our talk, but I'd like to talk a little bit about his early work. He started as a short story writer, and would you like to say something about the short stories?
Yes, I've nearly finished the first collection of his short stories, which was called 11 Kinds of Loneliness, 11 short stories, and I think the title says so much. They're about very different individuals. For example, there's the teacher, the primary school teacher, who gives her class awful Christmas presents and who stands looking expectantly for them to show their gratitude, and they know that she is not half as attractive or interesting as the people, the teachers that their friends have in the other grades. There's a really good jazz piano about a pianist, a black pianist, observed by two rich Americans. And all of the people here are losers in one way or another. In A Glutton for Punishment, it's a story about a young man, Walter Henderson, a young executive, who is actually given the sack, and he is trying to put a good face on it when he goes home. He doesn't want to tell his wife. He feels he will have other opportunities. He'll go out, as it were, to work every day, and then he'll until he finds something new, and then he'll tell her. And then he manages to keep this up for a while at home. And then, finally, he just cracks. This is the last paragraph of the story. He turned around and faced her with the suggestion of a melancholy smile. "Well, darling," he began. His right hand came up and touched the middle button of his shirt, as if to unfasten it. And then with a great deflating sigh, he collapsed backward into the chair, one foot sliding out on the carpet and the other curled beneath him. It was the most graceful thing he had done all day. "They got me," he said. That is fairly typical of the way in which he's dealing with losers. It has been compared with James Joyce's Dubliners, this collection, in the way it captures, the way Dubliners did, the soul, not so much of a city and its inhabitants, but in this case of a generation of Americans for whom the American dream just hadn't come true.
So it's a good, fine piece of writing to end the story. It's very, very clear. I picked out at the end of the biography a quotation from a former student of his called DeWitt Henry, who said after he died that Yeats was one of the few good voices in his head. "I hear his vigilant hectoring always for genuine clarity, genuine feeling, the right word, the exact English sentence, the eloquent detail, the rigorous dramatization of story. Don't evade, don't cheat," which is a pretty good description of a teacher, I think.
Very good. Yeah. And as I say, his teaching was, perhaps after his writing, the best thing that he did in his life.
Well, we're coming to the end of our discussion about Richard Yeats. Or not really discussion, since I haven't read anything by him, but you've certainly persuaded me to dive in.
Good.
Easter holidays are coming up, so I'll get started. And I'd like you to say now a little bit about Yeats's possible appeal to the people we teach, taught. You've very kindly given all the books to our school library. And I suppose someone might say, well, does Richard Yeats sound like the kind of author an adolescent, a teenager would enjoy? I mean, given how grim he is, how grim his life was, and some of the subjects, some of the subject matter which you described. So, two questions here. Is an adolescent going to enjoy Yeats's work? And secondly, which book would you recommend a 17 or 18 year old or whatever to start with Richard Yeats?
Okay, his appeal. I think I would say that we've had experienced, you and I, teaching over the years, particularly when we could go off the set syllabus in the transition year and allow pupils to choose their own subjects to write an extended essay on, how often the type of book that Yeats wrote features books about unhappy childhood, unhappy marriages, personal disasters of one kind or another, you know, The Boy Called It, that type of book. Now, I think that in the same way as I mentioned earlier, soap operas are appealing for that reason. I think one of the reasons might be that when people read them, they say, well, no matter how god-awful my life is, at least there is something that's worse. But on a more serious level, I think that I would recommend, well, of the books I've read, I'd certainly recommend A Good School for boarding school experience. I would recommend Revolutionary Road, Young Hearts Crying. A really grim one, the grimmest of them all, is called Disturbing the Peace. And of the ones I've read, and that's about a man's descent into, you know, a complete breakdown and ending up in a psychiatric ward because of his abuse of alcohol. And this mirrored a couple of episodes in Yeats's own life. So to people of all ages, and particularly to people in school, I think you will get into the books very easily. You will be able to identify the characters or identify with the characters at times. The stories move along at a very good pace. They're very well structured. They're very, very clear. They're very accessible. There are so many reasons why I would recommend him. He would remind me a little bit, when I'm just trying to think of my first impressions, of J.D. Salinger, The Catcher in the Rye, in that the extraordinary freshness of the style, which is has been preserved for, you know, well, certainly for the last 40 years.
Well, I think that will persuade a few of our pupils who are listening, I hope, to start on the works of Richard Yates. John, I'd like to thank you very much for your impassioned advocacy of Richard Yates and this very, very detailed conversation. I felt a bit helpless sitting here since I haven't read any of Yates.
You will. Maybe I'll interview you then.
But I also have a proposal, which is that later in the summer term, we have a discussion about a novel we both know extremely well, which is The Portrait of a Lady. We could do another podcast sometime in the summer when we used to teach it to...
Just a love-in between the two of us.
That's it, exactly.
Very good, yeah.
And then we will, both of us will persuade everyone that it's the great novel of the English language.
Fantastic, I look forward to it.
So, John Fandingham, thank you very much.
Thank you.